Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with Stan Weber in studio. We had an interesting discussion yesterday with Gary Dieter and Anthony Sherman about this interesting story. This rugby star, Lewis Reese Zammit, signing with the Kansas City Chiefs. Apparently, there were a few teams that are interested. And I saw a tweet from Nick Haynes, who's a host on PBS in Kansas City. And he said, "I'm on a plane heading back to Kansas City after visiting my family in Wales. This was the biggest topic of conversation in every pub I visited. A Welsh rugby star joining the Super Bowl champs. It's a mammoth story over there." And I was looking at the Daily Mail, which is the UK paper, and that's like a headline, and that's all they're talking about. And honestly, it's got a lot of traction here. But one of the reasons, and it's actually, I don't think it's crazy to think of it in these terms, Stan. Now with the new kickoff rule, it makes special teams more relevant. It brings back the kickoff return again. And Gehrig and Sherman just had Dave Tobe on their podcast a few days ago, and they said he was obviously thrilled with the new kickoff rule. Andy Reid said he was for it and was glad that it passed. But I like it. It brings more excitement. I like the kickoff return. I think it's going to be really interesting to see this version of it. But it does give an opportunity for a guy like this to be of use as far as a special teams player. I don't know. There's a lot there to talk about. Maybe first, the new kickoff rule. Are you a fan? Did when you saw this, adopting it basically from the XFL, do you like this?
Absolutely. The NFL is so good at making rule changes, and it's been that way for 50 years. When they think about a rule, they think it through well. The competition committee does a good job, and it's a great rule. And the kickoff has been taken out of the game in the NFL. First of all, remember they used to kick from the 30. Okay? Now they kick from the 35. So it's easier for kickers to kick it through the end of the end zone. And now kickers have gotten better and better and better. So you basically, on an opening kickoff, you just wait and set the ball down to 25. And it's really bad in the NFL when they need to get their commercials in. After a long drive for a touchdown, they are late on getting a commercial break in, because you don't punt the ball back and forth like we used to. So you're waiting for that natural break. So what do? Let's go to commercial after the touchdown. We're all good with that. Then they come back, kickoff, and they go to commercial again, except for the kickoff is just a guy kicking it into the net at the other end of the stadium. And, okay, now we're going to get the play back in. They did a great job with the rule. They could tweak it just a little bit, but there's some things that they did that were really excellent. They're kicking off in the 35 still, but the kicker, generally, they hope, will aim the football between a 20 and a goal line. The whole goal of this rule is the ball should drop down somewhere between the 20 and the goal line, and the kick returner return it every time. The kick returner cannot fair catch it and get the ball at the 25-yard line anymore. That's out. Okay? But what they've done is change where the players are, and they really haven't changed the game that much. Because when a kicker kicks the ball, let's say the ball drops down at the goal line for simplicity, and a returner is ready to roll. Well, when he kicks the ball and they run down the field, they would be about near the opponent's 40-yard line when the ball came down. That's where they're going to line up the 10 players. This is excellent because they could have said, let's line them up at the 30-yard line. Okay? That's too far downfield. Then you got almost like an offensive play where you may have to put offensive linemen in and run trap plays to try to get the kickoff return going. But when the guys are going to have their foot on the 40-yard line, 10 players are going to have their foot on the 40-yard line, and they're going to wait for the starting gun to go off. And that gun going off is when the ball hits the ground or the returner catches it. So if you get kickers, they're going to continue to improve, right? So let's just go 5 years from now, and a kicker could kick the ball, you know, 500 miles into the air and have it drop down to the 5 yard line. Before the fair catch rule, that's what Bill Belichick would try to do. Drop the ball inside the five, you couldn't fair catch it, and they'd go tackle you. Kickers are only going to get better. Guess what? It doesn't matter. You cannot, no one can move until the guy catches the football. So now everyone's waiting for the ball to be caught. 10 guys are standing on the 40-yard line with their foot on the line. Some people think that that kicker at the 35-yard line could blast a high kick and maybe not be a kicker anymore, like be an athlete to go tackle, like a rugby player. So they think he's going to run down and really circumvent things. Guess what? The NFL's smarter than that. The kicker can't go past the 50-yard line until the ball's caught. So take that one off. They're making it as close to what a real kickoff should be without having the players smash into each other after sprinting for 40 yards. So the kickoff team's all at the 40. Now here's what's really important. The other team is going to line up starting at the 35, but they don't have to line up all just 5 yards apart from each other, because that is what the USFL did, or the XFL, whichever league did it. They're combined now, and they start this weekend. Jake, you can start betting on some football this weekend. Okay, but if you line them all up 5 yards apart, it's really not like a kickoff return, right? But the NFL says, no, we're going to give you 5 yards room, and two of your guys can scoot back 5 yards. So you're going to have seven players lined up in a line. You're going to have two backed up 5 yards from there, and you have two returners. And the two returners need to go catch the ball. Because what could be tricky is if you hit a line drive kick and it bounces inside the 20-yard line and scoots all the way through the end zone, you get the ball at the 20. If you hit a line drive kick and it hits at the 21-yard line, they get it at the 40. So they're trying to make it where it's going to return. But these, you can put two guys back to return it. The other nine guys got to be between the 35 and the 30-yard line. And once that returner catches the ball, let's say at the goal line, boom, he catches it, it's game on. It'll look a lot like a kickoff return. It really will. And there's going to be chances for big plays. Special teams players are valued. And we get, how many kickoffs should there be a game? Eight?
Yeah, that sounds about
right. Eight new plays. Yeah. Or let's just round it to 10. 10 new plays that you get to watch NFL players play.
Exciting plays, too.
Super exciting plays.
Yeah.
Sam Munson had a tweet from Pro Football Focus, and he was reacting to the signing, and he said, new kickoff rule gives LRZ, that's what they call them, LRZ.
LRZ, I like that.
A much better chance to actually make a team. Also, if you watch XFL kickoffs, there are a lot of trick play returns. You're adding a player who can return kicks, but also fire a 20-yard lateral off either hand without turning around to do it. So I guess the Sam Munson is also a rugby fan.
Can't do it better than Travis Kelce.
Right. But guess what?
Did you see that throw Travis Kelce threw?
But maybe Kelce could and him could team up on something like that. I mean,
it's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be something to watch in training camp. Normally, I wouldn't think he'd have a path to making the team, but because of the special teams adjustments, I think he could.
We'll see if he can tackle.
Yep.
Those guys are great athletes. I love rugby. I love what it stands for and how those guys are physical, yet their skill. Everybody's involved. It's a little bit like basketball. You don't have linemen blocking for you. Everybody gets a chance to run when you pitch the ball out, but tough guys need to be there. You get a tackle. There's so many good things about rugby, but I'm telling you, even though the NFL doesn't want you to hit with your head, it's a little different when you put a helmet on and shoulder pads, because a rugby physical player realizes that there's a whole nother level of physicality that's expected, and it includes your head. And everybody, from Nate when he was a seventh grader playing for my buddy Andy Harding, or a fourth grader, they may have thought you're in fourth grade.
What
grade
were you? I was really about in the size of a fourth grader. I was in eighth grade.
Okay, but even pros, most are a little bit concerned about sticking their head in there and blasting somebody. Not their preferred course of action. And when you go to make a tackle, even though the NFL in slow motion, and college, by the way, makes it seem like you know exactly the intent of where your body's going to go onto another person's body while you're both sprinting two different directions at full speed. Okay? They'd throw you out of games because your head accidentally hits the wrong spot. But I'm telling you, in real football, you don't know exactly what's going to happen. When you launch to go tackle a guy, so this will be interesting to see, you know, how well will he launch to tackle people? Because it isn't going to be about grabbing someone around the waist and throwing them to the ground in the NFL. You're going to have to stick your shoulder pads in there, and your helmet legally is still going to be involved. And are you going to be willing to do it? So it's hard for players to change sports like that.
All right, let's talk about another topic with the Chiefs. Now that it's all somewhat settled, I don't think it's exactly official yet to where the Chiefs have the money available, but the L'Jarius Sneed saga has come to an end. He's in Tennessee.
With little return.
He signs a deal that gives him guaranteed $55 million, so he gets the contract he was looking for, and the Chiefs end up getting a 2025 third-round pick and a swap of seventh-round picks this year.
They must have really needed that money to maneuver.
They did.
I mean, we were saying that Sneed could be kept on the roster with the heightened salary cap availability. The salary cap grew tremendously, what, $30 million or so from last year? So you could have fit him in with the franchise tag, counting all the $17 million or so he was going to get paid. They could have done that, but they must have felt that was too big a squeeze.
Because there's other things they have to do.
Because we thought they would get a third minimum this year, and it's the third next year. And we are hoping for a second-round pick, right? So you really are getting a third next year. They basically have decided that, or they didn't trust him. Here's the other thing. Maybe they didn't trust that he would play with the kind of ability he had before because he's mad he's on a franchise tag. Maybe they thought his injury situation was more of an issue. You know, something in there. But I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I love the way he played. I mean, I thought he was awesome. And I think the Chiefs appreciated that. So I'm going to go with they really needed that $17 million of salary cap room to work with other contracts. Is that the way you see it?
The interesting thing about this whole deal is the knee. Because we got to go back and remember and it could have been maintenance, whatever. He was held out of minicamp, and then he was sidelined early in training camp and missed most of training camp. And remember, there was a lot of they didn't say a lot about it, right? And when do we get concerned about L'Jarius Sneed? But then he played, but he was on the injury report a lot. I think long term there's concern. Well, I know there's concern from the Chiefs about his knee. But then you look at Tennessee. I know I've seen some people say, well, if his knee was a problem, why would Tennessee give him a guaranteed $55 million? And, well, and my answer to that partially is when teams are desperate, right, to take advantage of a window, and they have this window now with Will Levis as quarterback and look how much money they're spending, why did they give so much money to Calvin Ridley? That didn't make sense.
Just because a team doesn't
right.
does it does not mean they're smart.
Right. There's a lot of things that they've done this offseason that could end up looking bad.
Okay? Right.
They've thrown a lot of money,
but
a lot
long
of
long term.
Right. Long term.
But
so
for 1 year, the Chiefs could have had him.
Sure, they could have.
Under the franchise tag.
But maybe they look at it and say, okay, we could, but then we can't bring back a veteran tackle. We can't bring back Mike Daniel. We can't do this and do that.
That's my point.
Right.
The alternative, not the draft pick compensation for him, because that was basically nothing for the Chiefs. It's that they need the money now to maneuver to make their squad better.
Right.
They're making a choice without Sneed and with other options.
And it's also them being confident in what they do with defensive backs.
Yes.
Knowing what they have and some young defensive backs, liking Naz Johnson, liking Nick Jones, feeling comfortable about Watson and Williams taking a step forward. There's been talk now that maybe they're interested in bringing a veteran like Xavien Howard. I don't know if that's the answer, but they could go out draft another one in the fourth or fifth round like they did with L'Jarius Sneed. Dave Merritt staying here makes a big deal. That makes a big difference. That's a big deal. So they still have the factory. They still have the system going, and they believe in that. And so I believe in that as well. But it's going to be really interesting to see what he is in Tennessee, because they gave him the contract that he wanted, and they made a steep investment.
On a 1 to 100, how do you value him? Just throw out a number as a Kansas City Chief last year, the last 2 years. Just give me a number.
Like 10 being the greatest, or like
100 being the greatest?
100.
Well, what are you going to grade? How valuable is L'Jarius Sneed?
95.
Okay. He'll be like a 65 for them.
All right.
Because Steve Spagnuolo, the Kansas City Chiefs, putting him in winning game situations. When the Titans are down by 10 and the game is 7 minutes left and they're not going to win, who cares what play he makes? I mean, he's not going to be as big a factor. It's not just how good you are in the NFL. It's the setting you're put into. L'Jarius Sneed was able to make big-time plays. He was a Swiss Army knife. He was awesome for Steve Spagnuolo. I love the way the guy, he could just guard you, Tyreek Hill. He could blitz off the edge. He can stop the run. He can do whatever you need. He's not Deion Sanders. He's not going to, you know, Deion Sanders was a commodity that said, I'm going to take this half the field, play man-to-man, no one's going to throw a pass over here. That's not L'Jarius Sneed. He's a Swiss Army knife, and guess what? He'll never be used that way by Tennessee.
That's a good point.
You're going to watch games, and you're not even going to remember. You're going to go, hey, yeah, I remember him. You're not going to watch Tennessee games and go, oh, gosh, they're dominating. Sneed just intercepted another pass. I can't believe they're 3 games over .500 halfway through the year. This is unbelievable. No, he's a perfect player for the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm glad he got his money. I'm not against him. But does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. There's something to be said for
Chris Jones, for instance.
Right.
You're playing for the Titans. He'd blow up a few plays, but you just kind of he'd fade into the woodwork. He would not be. Did you see that sack in the Super Bowl? Those things are memorable on millions of people's minds who don't even follow football that closely. You go become a Tennessee Titan, and you're just another good player.
All right, we'll take a break back after this on WHP. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you. Here is one of my favorite stories from yesterday, opening day of Major League Baseball. No, not that the Royals lost. That was not one of my favorites. I did not like that story, although I loved the way Cole Reagans pitched. He was very good. But I thought this was interesting. Nick Martini, Stan Weber, former K-State baseball star who was the 2010 Big 12 Player of the Year. He's 33 years old. He made his first opening day roster this year at 33. He reached base in 93 consecutive games across 3 seasons at Kansas State quite a few years ago. But yesterday, he's been up in the majors before, but this is the first time he's made an opening day roster. He hit 2 home runs yesterday. He spent time, a lot of time, AAA with the Louisville Bats. He played with the NC Dinos in South Korea. And so for the first time in his 13-year pro career, he got to start an opening day and hit 2 home runs.
Wow.
How about that?
That's awesome.
33 years old, getting your first opening day start.
Either one of the pieces of the story is awesome. 3 pieces, actually, that he was on an opening day roster and hit a home run. And hit another home run.
Right.
Wow.
What a day.
How much fun was that for his parents and for him?
It kind of reminds me. I was thinking about that when you were talking about Brad Underwood, you know, and what he went through to get to where he is now. And sometimes people achieve at an incredibly high level really early in life. But I think there's a different level of perspective. Like, that's one of the things I've always loved about Rex Hudler. When, you know, Steven and I both, we've talked about, you go, he's got a room in his basement just filled with souvenirs he collected during his time in the big leagues. He's talked, some big leaguers are like, man, I never wanted to go around asking other guys for stuff because I'm competing against those guys. I don't want to seem like a fan. But Hud spent 10 years in the minor leagues. And so, like, and he's very proud to say, I spent 10 years in the minors. I spent 10 years in the majors. And every one of those days that he spent in the big leagues, he was thrilled to be there. And he didn't take a single second of it for granted. You know, if you get to the big leagues at 20 years old, you might not quite have the same perspective. You know, you're 33 years old. You've been working your whole life playing in the minor leagues for little money and all that to get that opportunity. That means so much more to somebody like that than somebody who just, boom, falls right into it. That's really awesome. That's a great story.
It's like Nate Buchady hitting it on Fox.
Yeah, it's exactly like that, man. I do feel that perspective, though. I mean,
I know.
You know,
you weren't 20 when you started doing Fox.
I look at some of the other MLS broadcasters that are 15 years younger than me, and sometimes they'll gripe about a travel thing or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, well, it seems pretty
awesome. You're not griping about it. You're heading out today.
It's exciting. It's fun. Yeah, I feel honored to get to do it. I'm going to try to find a cool place in Houston to watch the Houston game tonight. See how excited the town is.
Will you be with Texas fans and A&M fans rooting against them, or will you be with Houston fans rooting for them?
Well, I'm going to be with a buddy of mine from Bishop Ward High School who lives down there now, and I think he's rooting for Houston, but I don't know. Hopefully we'll go to a Houston.
Maybe the whole town will jump on and make it kind
of
their pro
team. He said the town's excited about it.
I would think so.
Yeah. They got a lot going on, though. The Astros are in town, and that's sold out. My producer is working the Astros game tonight, and she texted me and said, I was going to try to get you Astros tickets, but there aren't any. It's a hot ticket right now. I didn't really want to go to the Astros game anyway, so that's fine.
We'll get a road trip. Take a trash can and you'll get in.
What kind of road trip is it, Houston to Dallas?
They're not very close. Yeah, they're not very close.
It's 4 hours.
That's a long ways.
That's not that bad, though. I mean, you would think that Houston...
Oh, you mean Houston fans going up?
Right.
Yeah, oh, yeah. From that standpoint, yeah, no, that's not that far.
Right.
But, I mean, when you think about the state of Texas,
But, I mean, because they're playing in Dallas tonight, don't you think there would be a healthy...
I would think so.
...turnout of Houston fans? Like, if you're a true Houston fan...
Yeah.
Like, if I was in Houston, I wouldn't be watching it in Houston. I'd get in the car and go to Dallas.
Right.
To see if they can get to the Final Four.
It'd be like KU fans driving to St. Louis.
Right.
I mean, I've made that trip before.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, but there's fans who are... jumping on board, citizens who say, why wouldn't we root for, you know, if UMKC were playing at a high level, KU, K-State, Missouri fans would all be on board wanting to win tonight.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, you don't hold anything against them. It's like, hey, it's their turn. I think they'd feel that way about Houston.
I'm rooting for them to win. I'm rooting for Kelvin Sampson to win. I think it would be great. Do you have a newspaper article there? What do you have there? I feel like you're getting ready to unveil something. What do you got?
Well, I'll just wait. I talk about what you guys want to, but I thought you maybe talk about this vote a little bit. So
I did not
bring this up.
Oh, this is
now
what I wanted to ask
bad.
You.
You make me bad, a bad guy. Like I brought this subject up. I'm waiting
listen,
for you.
Did you guys see Frank White's tweet yesterday? I'm not going to start this.
I saw it. About asking where to watch the game?
So, I just...
I saw it.
So, Frank White tweets a picture. I mean, that's just trolling.
He's a Jackson County executive, right?
Right, It says, so here it says, hashtag TBT, Throwback Thursday, right?
Yeah.
Opening day 2023. This is what the tweet says. A lot can happen in a year. From friend and Royals Hall of Famer... to an, quote, unpopular and desperate politician, because that's what he was called. So what's the best bar in Jackson County to watch today's game? And he tweets a picture of him and John Sherman last year at opening day, basically telling them, you know, hey, I'm not invited this year because I'm a desperate.
That picture of him on the field.
Right. Politician, so where can I watch the game today?
RIP mentioned.
Yeah, and then go read the
So he wasn't invited to the game, he's saying?
I think that's an implication, yes.
Like wow. He didn't unfurl that vote no sign.
Oh, no.
No, I saw that, too, from the...
Did he sneak in?
I don't know. Somebody did. Did you see that, Nate?
It's like a TIFO.
Say something. Don't be. No.
I don't know, man.
You can't. You don't get to sit there and not say nothing.
You have to know.
What do you think of the vote no banner that was unfurled from the upper levels yesterday at Kauffman Stadium?
Hey, that's the way these things work, right? People have a right to voice their opinions. And there's certainly opinions on this whole subject.
People are all pissed off about this now.
People are fired up, man.
Twitter was an interesting place yesterday.
It sure was.
A lot of people.
Is everybody mad?
I feel like both sides are mad.
I think it's a healthy fit. I mean, because just from people I knew and other people tweeting things that, like, people be like, oh, yeah, we really should get rid of the stadium. And they're, you know, show video of everybody going crazy.
This is the thing to me. And maybe this is a dumb opinion. It probably is, though. It's interesting timing to have opening day just a couple of days before the vote, this big vote, right?
Yeah.
And for people to go out there. And even though, honestly, they've said, even if this vote doesn't pass, they're not staying at Truman Sports Complex.
Right.
They're leaving there, right? But for people, to allow people to get emotional and go out and romanticize what Kauffman Stadium is out there and see it in its full glory and see it, we don't get to see it that often, but see it filled, right?
With 65-degree weather.
Right, to see it on its, because you look at some of the pictures, it looks gorgeous. It looked like postcards being produced, right? And to have that fresh in everyone's minds, what, 3 or 4 days from the vote, I don't know, that's a, kind of a fun and interesting dynamic, right? Whether it means anything or not, but people got, that's what I was seeing yesterday. Oh, they want to tear this place down? Oh, and people got emotional about it. And guess what? It's okay to be emotional about it, because there are many people in this town that love that stadium, that love where it is. Doesn't mean it's the right place to be. Doesn't mean downtown people are wrong, but that caused a lot of emotion yesterday. I just think it's interesting timing, no?
Will the Royals winning or losing have any effect on the feeling about the vote?
Oh, I think if the Royals were winning,
if the Royals won 3 games this weekend, would that help the yes votes? Like, I want to support the Royals and Bobby Witt?
I mean, just like in general, if the Royals were coming off a season where they were a playoff team or they contended or whatever.
This weekend specifically.
Nah, I think a game in a regular season baseball game is so insignificant to the overall season, you know?
Opening day means so much more,
opening day,
unfortunately.
Everyone's watching opening day for the most part. That's true.
Yeah. But I think, like, okay, so the Royals were terrible last year, right? I do think, and they'll deny it, I think that there was an element of, well, let's go and spend a whole bunch of money. Because one of the complaints, one of the criticisms you've heard is, well, why should we vote to continue to give you money for the stadium when you won't even put money into the baseball team? When you won't put money into getting more players to make this a winning product? I just don't think it's a coincidence. You know, Bobby Witt Jr. extension, a bunch of money to Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo, and that I think,
well, that's
that
why I
had
was
something to do with it.
If it would have been confirmed with a win yesterday, I just wondered if, they really are investing, and we need to invest in them so they can invest more, and we can get back to 2014 and 2015 when the Royals' seasons were so much fun.
I'm sure they would have loved to win, but, I mean, baseball is such, you know, it's such a long season, one series doesn't matter, but I do think that did they want to get better anyway? Yes. Did they want to add some players? Yes. But I think that was a pretty good motivator to go out and spend some money on the team, so that removes that criticism from people.
Yeah, I just standing on the outside watching, and I said this yesterday, and I think the vote really comes down to, like, if you live in Jackson County, do you want the team to stay in Jackson County or not? If it doesn't pass, then I think you have to open up the possibility that the team can move somewhere else in the city, I think would be the first thing, you know, Kansas, Northland, whatever.
Notice how you said Kansas first.
Well, yeah, I'm in Kansas. You know, it wouldn't bother me if they moved to Kansas at all.
But that's
I'm being
your
perfectly
angle
honest
here.
About it.
That's your angle.
I'm not angling on it, but I think, like, it doesn't seem, I mean.
You seem pained by this.
You are.
I haven't seen this much pain on your face in a long time.
I'm trying to choose my words carefully.
He seems constipated.
Well, yeah, I am uncomfortable because I'm trying to choose my words carefully because this is important stuff, and they're important people involved.
When we start doing that around here?
Yeah, well, I'm trying. I'm trying to turn over a new leaf.
Right. Before you said,
Stan has something to say too.
Before you said, I think, this week, tell me if I'm wrong, that you don't, people should vote what they want to vote, and you're kind of neutral, saying,
yeah.
Please. So, to me, that seems like that'd be easy for you to say. You don't, your face doesn't look that way today.
Well,
what's different?
No, what I did say yesterday, and I thought about this too, was like this new, all of a sudden, the week of the vote, there's a change to the plan again about Oak Street, you know? And I think I told the story that, you know, one of the guys that I admire the most in this town, Cliff Hillig, always tells me about, if you're going to try to sell somebody on something, you have to have a vision. And his thing is, a vision is a vivid description of a future state. If you really want to sell somebody on it, this is exactly what I'm selling you. Picture this, and here it is. And I think if you want to be charitable to the Royals on this, you say, well, at least they're listening to people, right? Like, they're listening. Hey, you didn't invest in the team, so they go out and they invest in the team, and they sign Bobby Wood Jr. And if the mayor says, we want you to keep Oak Street open, they listen, and they go do this. But it just kind of seems like, and I don't know, maybe this is the mayor's fault. Maybe he should have been saying this months ago. But people have already cast their vote. And it seems like they still don't even really fully know what they're voting for. It seems, and it kind of makes you wonder how many other things will change even after the vote is passed. And maybe that doesn't matter.
So are you leaning toward a no, and you weren't earlier in the week?
No, I'm not leaning towards anything. I don't want to tell anybody in Jackson County how to vote.
But you look so pained. What's your opinion, though? What are you leaning towards?
You look pained. I don't understand that.
If I were living in Jackson County, what would I do? I would vote yes.
There it is.
I think if you just simplify it, I would vote yes, but I wouldn't love it. I would vote yes and wish that they had handled this whole situation a lot better. I wish that the team would have had their ducks in a row and told me exactly what this is and felt like they actually had a plan instead of setting their own deadlines and then not making them and moving where the stadium's going to be and all these things and moving what the stadium's going to look like. I would vote yes simply on the fact that I don't want the team leaving my area.
Stan's right. This pains you.
That's what I would do. I would vote yes, but I don't love the way. I feel like I would be pretty frustrated that this is the way the whole thing's gone down. It just doesn't seem like it's been a very well thought out process.
No, you don't think so?
That's all.
There's Nate Piketty back after this on WHP. Welcome back to the show. We listened to Nate. Very, how would you describe it, Jake?
Uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortably.
Uneasy, Nate.
Give his thoughts on this stadium vote.
He's uneasy. I get
you
it.
You are uneasy. You're on pins and needles over there.
Yeah.
I want to hear what.
Stan, what do you say?
Yeah, what do you
like
say,
we'd like to have you have the final word,
yeah,
please.
Wrap it up.
I'm not on
please.
Pins and needles. So I was just wondering why Nate was. Because I think that any this is a great debate subject. If you said, okay, we're going to have the four of us here that are seeing each other right now, working at the radio station. If two of us went one direction and two the other and said, you're going to debate this subject, I'd be indifferent about which one you wanted me to debate. Because there's so many different viewpoints from so many different people. So I'm very comfortable with that. So that's my point. And I think the vote's going to be very, very close. Because of all the different interests. I work downtown. I know the people downtown. It's an absolute easy thumbs up win for them. They absolutely want to see billions of dollars invested into the downtown loop area and help the Power and Light District and the ability to attract people for activity downtown. It's the easiest thing ever. They absolutely 100% want it to be done. Now, if you're in the Crossroads, just outside the loop, they're like, well, I think I would love to see that investment, but then you feel sorry for the companies that lose their business and the artsy kind of feel that's on that area south of 670 would go away. It would be more like a extension of the loop of the inside loop downtown, right? It'd make the downtown footprint bigger, so it wouldn't be that kind of cool, different vibe. It would be more of the same. As sports fans, we got to say we love it. But I think there's another thing that's come out that's interesting, and that's the South Loop Link. Because one of the things I think that's not involved in this vote at all, but is involved, is 670 runs between T-Mobile and where the new stadium would be, right? And it's not real cool to have to walk across those bridges a block apart, and they're not that comfortable and that wide, and you can't carry a number of people. And Some people feel uncomfortable when you're walking by cars and looking over 20, 30 feet down car. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But they would like to cover that up and put a lid, basically, and make a park, the South Loop Link. They want to make it a park, so then you really do extend. Again, the philosophy is take Power and Light, T-Mobile, and that whole downtown area where people are starting to live, and there's a grocery store down there and a lot of activity, and just have you walk right over to the stadium without even knowing you're going over 670. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But they were asking the feds for $75 million to help get that project done, and the feds said no. So it's a $217 million guesstimate about how much it'll cost, and the project so far has got $92 million of activity. So it doesn't really matter, but these things are kind of tied into each other. So I just think that's an interesting thing. And the other thing I would say is, if you vote yes, then there's a lot of fun things about it, a lot of stability. The Chiefs and the Royals will be here for a long, long time, and that's very, very good. But if you vote no, it's not over. The world's not ending if there's a no vote, because, for instance, didn't the Royals have one of their downtown or changed locations in Clay County? They could go right back to Clay County, and the Chiefs could ask for money for just themselves, and don't you think the Chiefs would win? They may get all three-eighths sales tax. They wouldn't have to split with the Royals.
Mm-hmm.
If the Royals go to Clay County, like they almost thought about doing,
the Chiefs would love that.
The Chiefs would love it. So it's really crazy. This isn't the end of the line for the metropolitan area. And even if Kansas does step in and do it, still the metropolitan area needs the Chiefs and Royals. That's absolute. I'm fine with the yes vote, but I'm fine with people expressing their opinions, because this is there's a lot of divergent opinions about this. And I'll point one other thing out, Nate. I mean, Jake, can I point one thing out real quick?
Absolutely, Stan.
This idea.
I'll massage it.
This idea.
What?
I'm sorry. This idea that you're going to have a 3/8 sales tax for the Royals and the Chiefs, for the Royals and the Chiefs and stadiums being diverted to other programs in Jackson County, is not. Everyone acts like this is a great deal. They're making the Chiefs and Royals give all this money to others. No, they're taxing you to give money to other programs. I don't think that's right. Don't do a 3/8 sales tax. Do a lower sales tax. We're voting for the Royals and the Chiefs, not to give Jackson County some more money for different programs. So those who brag about, oh, look, the Royals and Chiefs are doing all this money, they're giving it back. Why are we taxing certain people to give money to these other programs and calling it a Chiefs-Royals deal? You see what I'm saying? That doesn't make sense to me. Let's give the Chiefs and Royals all the money and let's reduce the tax. Or, you see what I'm saying? When people say, oh, Jackson County's getting money back. I like the fact they don't have to pay insurance, and there's a couple of things. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
Why should you get taxed? Why should Todd Lebo get taxed? And then they decide they're going to give it to these other programs when he thinks he's voting for stadiums.
I think Lebo should be taxed.
Okay.
That's just me.
He's a yes vote.
By the way, Tuesday we'll have Nate Buchanan live at the polls.
Oh God!
Throughout the entire show,
I just can't wait for this vote to be over.
Sam, please
personally.
Tune in, would you? He's going to exit polls with Nate Buchanan all day Tuesday.
I love democracy. However it turns out, go
That's
for
right.
it.